puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
And I look forward to it as well. It's a band in Manitoba with Gordon Goldsborough from the Manitoba Historical Society. Good morning, Gordon.
Good morning, Bruce.
So I understand that you have an update on last week's topic.
Yeah, we talked about abandoned waterways of Winnipeg, and it was obviously a subject that drew a lot of attention from our listeners.
Right.
One of them brought to my attention a map that shows several other creeks that existed in the 1870s. So on the Assiniboine River, for example, we have McMillan's Creek, Myrie Creek. On the Red, we have Logan's Creek, Pritchard's Creek, St. John's Creek, Inkster's Creek, Taylor's Creek. None of them were big, but they were still there in the 1870s. There was also a former channel of the Seine River further north than the present-day point at which it discharges into the Red at the site of present-day Elmwood. So lots more abandoned creeks in Winnipeg.
Yeah, and I got an email as well that said Browns Creek is still discernible at Waterfront in Bannatyne, where the city landscaped the depression going into the Red about 15 years ago, even building a small wooden boardwalk there.
And another listener told me that if you go further upstream, you know, in the city itself, it was kind of taken away. But if you go further enough, far enough back, it actually does pick up again. So you can see part of Browns Creek further away from the river.
And we always love, of course, when listeners can join in the discussion and contact you as well.
Absolutely. Look forward to it.
So let's talk about the clue you left us with last week.
Well, we're talking about a building in Portage-la-Prairie, which is the former CN railway station that's been abandoned because of not just one, but two revolutions in our public transportation system here in Manitoba.
Revolutions. Not armed revolutions, I don't think, right?
I mean revolution in the sense of a major change.
Okay.
So if we go back to the very earliest days of Manitoba, the only way to travel between communities was on foot or by horse. Mm-hmm. So the arrival of railways in the late 1870s made it much easier to get from place to place. Most of the towns around Manitoba, in fact, owe their existence to the railway. And at least into the early 20th century, the easiest means to travel between distant towns was by train.
To be sure. Well, when was the Portage Railway Station built?
Well, that building, which is the subject of our discussion today, dates from 1908, meaning it's 112 years old this year. It was built by the Grand Trunk Pacific. And of course, that name probably doesn't resonate much today because it's been long gone. In 1919, in fact, over 100 years ago, the Grand Trunk merged with the Canadian Northern Railway to become the Canadian National Railway.
Right, CN.
Right. But as we go through the 20th century, the railway became increasingly focused on freight traffic, you know, things like grain, for instance, and passenger traffic started to decline, and especially between the small communities within Manitoba, mainly because there were other means to do it. So we see that with the Portage Railway Station, it is really one of the first symbols of that revolution as it developed a new life, not so much for passenger traffic on trains, but as a depot for intercity buses. Ah. And these weren't just carrying people either. They transported all sorts of small freight items, perishables, mail. You know, it became a standard way to get things around the province rather than on the train.
Bus depot. So when did the intercity buses begin operating then in Manitoba?
I was kind of surprised by this when I started doing the research that the earliest buses began to operate as early as the late 1910s. And by the early 1920s, we already had some regular bus routes. So, for example, there was a route between Winnipeg and Selkirk that would take people back and forth between those two places. Through the 20s and 30s, we see buses venturing out from Winnipeg over, well, what at the time were relatively primitive roads. They went through the Interlake, they went to Brandon. There were local lines that connected places like Dauphin and Swan River. We had bus lines through some of the towns of southwestern Manitoba that gradually over this period, we started seeing more and more bus lines as an alternative to the train.
Yeah. Well, how did they fare through the Depression?
Very well, in fact. Bus ridership skyrocketed through the 30s as more people, of course, could not afford their own transportation. You know, this was the era, for example, of the Bennett buggy. You know, the car pulled by a horse because they couldn't afford the gas to put in the car. In 1930, it's sort of at the cusp of the Great Depression, the provincial government here in Manitoba passed legislation basically to ensure that public buses were safe, you know, because you have to have a safe bus if you want to have people riding it. And this legislation also created a network of sort of standardized bus routes. But there was another major change that happened around this time too, the introduction of the diesel engine into buses.
Yeah.
The diesel engine increased the range that they could travel, which is important, increased their performance, and it increased their reliability. And so all of these things made it much more possible and popular to take a bus as an alternative to train travel. You know, and so several bus companies were founded in the 1930s. One that listeners may recall, in fact, was the Grey Goose Bus Lines that was established in 1934 by some men from Carman.
What are some of the other bus companies?
Well, there's a bunch of them, of course, and names that may be familiar to some of our listeners, the ones that persisted into the 1960s or 70s. Well, here's a few names. The Red River Motor Coach Lines, Moore's Trans-Canada Bus Lines, White Ribbon Bus Lines, Eagle Bus Lines, Beaver Bus Lines, Manitoba Motor Transit, and Webb Bus Lines. But the 800-pound gorilla, you know, the one that really dominated in the bus company business, was one called Transcontinental Coach Lines.
Well, I don't know that one. Tell me about it.
Okay, well, Transcontinental Coach Lines was founded at Winnipeg in 1936. 2 years later, it became a subsidiary of a Calgary-based firm called Central Canadian Greyhound Line. And by 1946, it became a wholly owned subsidiary of the U.S.-based Greyhound Corporation. So during the 1950s and into the early 1960s, this was what we might think of as the golden age of buses in Manitoba. There were over a dozen bus companies serving nearly all the major towns. Undoubtedly, the two major players were Greyhound and Grey Goose. I always wondered, you know, the similarity of those names, why they settled on Grey, for example. I don't know. I mean, Grey, I can understand, because, of course, that's the name of a racing dog, fast, you know, a good symbol. But Grey Goose, never really sure about that one. Well, anyway, the old CN station in Portage became a Greyhound depot. And just as most towns were served by a single railway, either CP or CN, most also had just one bus company. But things began to change in the 1970s as the smaller bus companies began to be swallowed up by the larger ones.
So there was a decline.
Well, through the 1970s, the bus companies were impacted by declining ridership, which in turn was caused by the growing popularity of cars.
Oh.
Of course, you know, if you can get in your own vehicle, drive wherever you want, you know, as opposed to having to wait until the bus is going, you know, it's just a little more convenient, right? And of course, you can go wherever the car can drive as opposed to only where the bus route takes you. So, you know, there's just sort of the convenience factor, I suppose. And this whole series of mergers that are happening through this period comes to a head in 1997, because that's when Greyhound and Grey Goose merged under the single name of Greyhound, and it became essentially the largest scheduled intercity bus carrier in all of Canada.
So is this where the second revolution or the second abandonment of the Portage Depot happened?
Yep, but not immediately. It took some time. So in July of 2018, after two decades of being the dominant bus service on the prairies, Greyhound announced that it would discontinue service to most of the Western Canadian provinces at the end of October. And the bus depot at Portage closed along with it. So essentially, the double death, if you will, of the Portage Depot, you know, first for trains and second for buses, and more generally, the demise of public transportation around Manitoba was primarily caused by cars. Now, sure, there were other contributors. You know, one of them was concerns for safety after a rather gruesome killing of a bus passenger near Portage La Prairie that happened in 2008. But really, cars were the major factor that killed the buses. And so I would contend that the rise and fall of the intercity bus is yet another example of, you know, major changes in Manitoba that have occurred during the past 100 years. And I think a good witness to that transformation is this 112-year-old bus depot and train station at Portage La Prairie.
Oh, well, thanks for that, Gordon. Let's talk about next week. What's the clue for next week?
Well, back in August, we talked about a scientific research laboratory that was hidden under a building in downtown Winnipeg.
Right.
Next week, we're going to talk about another abandoned science lab, this time one that 40 years ago had a major problem with bears.
I have no idea what that would be. Looking forward to it, though, Gordon. Thanks for joining us this morning.
We'll talk next week. Bye-bye.
No matter where I go, every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba. Many moons.